Hey, good morning. I want to explore various aspects of the forthcoming celebration of Sukkot, both with respect to its proximity to the Yom Ha'aretz and in terms of its perhaps role in history. The title, rather grandly chosen, was at a moment when I couldn't think of anything else and it would allow me to speak about whatever I like, having had a vague Sukkot theme. It is well known that the primary theme of Sukkot is Simcha. Famous Rambam in Perek Ches of the Shofar Sukkot Lulav, Afal Pi Shekol Amoyadas Mitzvah Lismoyach Bohen, even though there is a mitzvah to rejoice in all the Yom Tovim, the Chagas Sukkot Hoysa Shom B'Mikdosh Simcha Yisairah. In the Beit HaMikdosh there was an exceptional degree of Simcha, and in fact, as we know, we refer to it as the Zman Simchaseinu, which I don't think is immediately obvious. We're very familiar, Pesach is this, the Shavuot is that, but not for, we could very easily, as the uninitiated, someone coming in from outside, refer to Pesach as Zman Simchaseinu. I don't think anyone would really bat an eyelid. So I think it's quite important that we understand why it is called, if you like, the paradigm, the quintessential Zman of Simcha. The important starting point, of course, is the Mishneh Cholil, which refers, it's well known, elaborates, Mishalo Ros Simcha Space Hashreva Lo Ros Simcha Yomov. Someone who never saw the Simcha Space Hashreva had never really seen Simcha in his entire life, and then it goes to a long description of all the events about the light and how it was all set up. So the Simcha Space Hashreva was the most magnificent Simcha of the year, gets on flavour. Halavim, the Kinoris, and the Volim, and Plotayim, the Chatzotras, the Levim playing all kinds of musical instruments, Ukle Shir, below Mispot, innumerable instruments. And now, interesting. Al Chomesh Esrei Ma'alos Hayodos Me'ezros Yisrael Ezros Noshim. And they stood there on the 15 steps that descend from the court of Yisrael to the courtyard of the women, which correspond to the 15 Shemal Sheva Tehillim. To correspond to the 15 Shemal Sheva Tehillim. It's quite interesting why there were 15 steps. Perhaps we'll have a chance to think about that. And then it continues, I'm just digesting the Mishnah, refers to it as this magnificent procession, as they walk from one gate to the other, blown shofars and so on. And then, Higia La Azora, when they reach the Azora, Tokavei Riyu, Tokavei Riyu, the shofar, Haitokim v'holchim, they blew continuously, ad shemigiyim l'shah yotzim imizrach, until they reached the gate that faced eastward. Higiyim l'shah yotzim imizrach, when they got from that gate to that gate, the one that faces from the east, hofchu paneihem imizrach l'marot. This is very odd. They turned their faces from the east to the west. V'omron said, Abu Sein l'shah v'mokam azeh. Our ancestors, and this apparently is a reference to events of the Bais Rishon period, our ancestors who were in this place, Achoyreim El Hohechol Ufnehem Kedmo, they pointed their backsides towards the Hechol, towards where the Beis HaMikdash is, and they faced eastward, Umishtachavim Kedmo L'Shemesh, and they prostrated themselves eastward towards the sun. That's what they used to do. I mean, standing there, it's the most exalted moment of Simcha in the entire year. And what they tell us is they want to remind us that our ancestors in the time of the Bais Sheni were Odeh Avodah Zorah, and so the Bais Rishon were Odeh Avodah Zorah, and that when things went wrong, rather than davening towards a Kodesh Baruch, as it were, towards the Heichal, instead of that, they pointed their backside that way. It doesn't just tell us they faced one way, it pointed their backside, as it were, to say how much contempt. That's the indication of how much contempt they had, and they prostrate themselves towards the sun, which is Avodah Zorah. But in contrast, V'onah l'kar einenu, we, our eyes are turned to God, and Rabbi Yehuda brings a variant text of this, Onah l'kar, we are for God, l'kar einenu, and our eyes are to God. Well, a variant text of the same idea. So you will notice that when in comparison with the events of the Bais Rishon, they said Laka Einenu. They use the name Ka. So it's a strange use. I mean, there are other names of God, but they use the name Yud He. And you will notice, of course, that Yud He is 15. And we've mentioned earlier in the Mishnah that they stood on 15 steps that joined the two courtyards, which corresponded in turn to the 15 Shir Malos in Tehillim. So that will be significant. But this episode is extremely strange, and it seems, therefore, that the pinnacle of the Simcha, that moment of greatest simcha, was to be able to say that while our ancestors in the era of the Bais Rishon were Ode Avodah Zorah, why they need to mention it is not clear, we only look to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, we have this sense, this God awareness. I think one can't help but to try to translate this a little bit into a modern experience and see the Simcha of Sukkot as the climax, not just as some historical process as described here, that our ancestors went through some kind of spiritual extreme low, and we eventually have reached this spiritual pinnacle, that at least justifies the title of the Shir, the theme of the Mishnah, but seeing this as the climax of the events of the Yom Noraim, which have obviously finished only a few days before Sukkot. And there are a couple of interesting sources I want to share with you. One is Rav Hirsch in the collected writings on Yom Tovim, he tries to link them together with an idea which in fact really comes from Chazal themselves. After you were called with a shofar power to return to God, and after Yom Kippur fasting and solemnity, when you were urged to break your adherence to a lifestyle which is alienated from God, you are to celebrate and experience true joyfulness. That is a one sentence encapsulation of the spiritual emotional roller coaster from Sukkot shofar to Yom Kippur fasting to Sukkot celebration. But actually, there's a medrash in Vayikra Rabbah which gives a very interesting spin on this. It refers to the Arba Minim, it refers to the Sobeya Samochos, the seven simchas, as how the medrash reads the posuk of Sukkot, which are the Dalet Minim, the Sukkah, the Chagiga, and Simcha, and so on. Why do you need everything? So Rabin gives the following moshul. Moshul is Shnaim Shenichnasu Eitel Adayan. Two people go for a Din Torah in front of a Dayan. The Leis Onan Yodin Man Hu Nitzeach. And when they go in, no one knows who's going to win. Elamanda Nosiv Bayon Biyode. But when they come out, the one who is holding the bayon in his hand, some kind of bayonet, it's the same word that gives us bayonet, it's some kind of symbol, it's a piece of paper that says he won, whatever, it's a symbol of his success. We know that he was the victorious party in the din. That's the moshul. Kach Yisrael v'umas ha'olam, so to the Jewish people, and the goyim, boyim, the Rosh Hashanah, they come in and they're, as it were, sparring before God and Rosh Hashanah, we don't know who's going to win. But when the Jewish people, as it were, emerge from the processes of din of the Yom Noraim, holding the lulav and esrog in their hands, on Yodin to Yisrael in the Mitzchuyo, we know that the Jewish people are victorious in the process, and our accusers and all the forces that act against us have once again been unsuccessful. And so it seems from this, the tying of the Sukkah and the Arba Minim together, that the celebration of Sukkahs is not simply, okay, you know, it's all over, and, you know, now let's celebrate. It's not simply that we're not Kodesh Baruch Hu Chassid Shalom wasn't very good at organising the calendar, and you've got to have all the days at once. You know, you wait and wait without the bus. You wait and wait and wait and wait, and they all come at once. It doesn't have to be like that. That somehow there is an intrinsic connection between the experience of Sukkot. Now, I'd like to take Andy the celebration that we retain our status as the Am Nivcho, that we are promised once again the protection, and if you like, and we bear in our hands the symbol of the victory that we celebrate. So that's one way of looking at it. I would like to move that on very slightly. We finished Yom Kippur with the declaration Hashem Hu Elokim, and I started saying in my shul, I realise that this is a, you know, there's a flow, there's an ilah, it's familiar, but this idea of the Shemas and so on stuck at the end, it's quite unfamiliar to people. People are used to saying it, but they don't really necessarily understand what it's all about. Why is it that after the entire 40-day process that began with Elul and the Yom Noraim and Shuvah and Yom Kippur and finally Nila, The last bit is Hashem Hur Elohim. What is this about? Now, if of course the phrase Hashem Hur Elohim is the phrase that is borrowed from the story of Melachim, of Eliyahu HaNavi on Har Carmel, that he finds himself in a world where the Umas HaOlam, as it were, that the gods of the Gentiles have taken over, the Nevi HaBaal are preeminent, and he's pretty much the only person left who is fighting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you all know the story, they go through this process, and Eliyahu challenges them to show that their God can do something, and he eventually starts to mock them. Is he asleep? Is he in the bathroom? He starts going through, he's quite mocking. And eventually when they started screaming and shouting, and they start cutting themselves and doing all kinds of things to try and invoke the favour of their Baal, and nothing happens, eventually Eliyahu instructs that they should take his Mizbeach, and he should cover it with water, fill it with water, to make sure that it seems even more unlikely that, of course, he invokes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the fire consumes it also, and this is the end of the Nevi'ah Baal, and he shouts out Hashem Hu Elohim. So this phrase Hashem Hu Elohim comes from there. Of course, unfortunately, for those who are less familiar with Nach, this is completely fully. Most people, I suspect, I said this to, have no idea where this phrase had come from, and the sense that somehow or other the Jewish people are victorious, our perception of the divine is victorious, that we live in a world of, if you like, of false prophets and false ideologies, and we're shouting out Hashem Hu Elohim. I should have said to you before Yom Kippur, that's what this is all about. That's Hashem Hu Elohim. But I think actually there's a much deeper concept that we're trying to internalize at this moment, that we can then transpose to this celebration of Sukkot and see how it all fits together, which is that it's Hashem, with the Shem Havaya, the name which is the etzem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what they call in another place the tetragrammaton, or the ineffable name, right? That's two, with our quintessential and tetragrammaton. I hope you're making merry. One? No, paradigm's an easy one. Right? Okay. Now, and Elohim is a Kodesh Baruch Hu as a Dayan, Shofet. This refers, I think, to what we would consider to be this split. You could use the word bifurcation, but you won't like it. Right? The split between the essential perception of God, what we know about Kodesh Baruch Hu, our immunity in his identity, in him being kind, in being merciful, in him being giving, all the things we know that are axiomatic to our understanding of the divine, and the harsh reality that we live in a difficult world where there is pain, where there is suffering, where we perceive injustice. We find it very, very difficult to bring together Hashem and Elohim. They are quite different, and while we have Emunah and while we are confident that the Hashem is the Elohim, it's very difficult to see it in reality. I would like to suggest but what happened on Har HaCarmel was suddenly this reality, this perception. There was a glimpse from Shemayim as the fire comes down, that the God up there is really one and the same as the God down here. And that is one of the most difficult spiritual achievements that we can make in the year. And perhaps, Lo Aleinu, when someone says this on their deathbed, they're at least trying to express some glimpse of this as they're moving from this world to another world. And on Yom Kippur, at the end of the whole process, the most significant thing we can say is that we can bring together our intellectual and emunah understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is Hashem, and say that the manifestation, which is so difficult to square with that understanding, they are one and the same. Hashem Hu Elohim. That is a major spiritual achievement, to be able to say that with conviction. Hashem Hu Elohim. That's what happened on Har Carmel, and that's what's happening to us at the end of Yom Kippur, which means we are trying to bring together the immanent reality and the transcendent reality. Maybe that is why this happens at the end of Ovinu Malkeinu. All the way through we've made this declaration, Ovinu is God as immanent, our father, near, close, accessible, and as Malkeinu, which is the king, the transcendent reality, and they are very difficult. It's very difficult to bring the two together. We've declared all the way through Ovinu Malkeinu, and then it's Hashem Hu Hu Elohim. One of the things that I think the Ashkofa Sforum are big on, understand that that's a wonderful idea. We leave Yom Kippur on this Hashem Hu Elohim high. That's wonderful. But you've got to concretize the Hisorus. You can't just leave it there. Because if you leave it there, then gradually it all dissipates. You've got to do something concrete. And this is very much where we differ from other religious systems. We have to take this onerous and we have to make it into something real. We have to do things that make that part of our reality. And I think these sources are pointing to the same kind of sense, that to be able to stand in the Beis HaMikdash and say, there were those people who had this split reality. Our ancestors in earlier times, they could not perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu as involved in this world. If you look in the way the Rambam describes the development of Avodah Zorah in the first parak of the relevant halachas, he says, if you read behind the scenes, man became unable to relate to God and eventually split the God up there from the reality down here. What we've done in Yom Kippur is tied them back together. Avinu Malkeinu Hashem Guru Elokim. Now they say our ancestors have failed in this regard. They were incapable. They might have meant well, but they were incapable of squaring the reality of this world. They had this as well. It is well known that that it's quoted in the name of various Chassidish Rebbes. Hashomayim Shomayim LaHashem VaOres Nosan Livnei Odom. That's very nice. But we know that. The Shemaim is it's very nice. Well, the world is given of man. What's the connection with the first part? We know that the Shemaim belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's to make of it the Shemaim, meaning that we're supposed to take the reality of this world and link it to the spiritual world. Otherwise, we don't need both phrases. It's the very name of the Kedusha Rim and the Kotzka and various other people. So, what happens? It can happen after Yom Kippur. Because we're in the mood, we've already got this sense, and we can stand now and we can say Einenu Leko, our names are Leko Einenu, our eyes are HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ko. Now we understand why the theme of 15 and the name Ko appears all through this Mishnah. Why there's this emphasis? They have to stand on the 15 steps that join the two courtyards, the courtyard of the men and the courtyard of the women, to correspond to the 15 Shamalos. And then when they got to the right place, they turned their backs on the false ideology of their ancestors, and they said, L'koi Neinu, it's Kor again. Because the number 15 is critical. The Gemara Menachos, Kibur Kor Hashem, quotes the apostle, Kibur Kor Hashem, Sur Olamim, Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world with Kor, from which Chazal understand in this Gemara, that Yud is the letter of Olam Haba, and He is the letter of Olam Hazeh, and the Tziruf of the Yud and He represents the connection between this world and the next world. To be able to say the name Ka, and that's I think why it's used in this context, is to say there's an understanding these worlds are joined. There isn't this split, this bifurcation between the spiritual world and the physical world. They are a single entity, and one of the most complicated, if you like, difficult things we can do in our Avodas Hashem is to be able to, first of all, understand this, and then to declare it and appreciate it and integrate it. And all the experiences of Sukkot, this celebration, are to enable us to capture that moment that we're able to put the two, and if you look in the Gevuras of the Maharal, he explains quite clearly why it is that the Yud is the letter of Adam Habor, it represents a dot, it's very small, because of course you can't represent a non-physical domain within the physical, so he's the very slightest, of course the number 10 is significant as well, and the reason why Olam Hazer is with the letter He is because, certainly in Ksav Ashuris, a He is a Dalad with a Yud inside it. We have this false understanding of the physical world. His pashtus is represented by the number 4, if you like, the four directions, Abakanfes Oret, and inside it, concealed within the Dalad, is the Yud, which is why the Hay is comprised of the Dalad and the Yud together, and that is, if you like, the appropriate Hashkofa of the purpose and function of Olam Hazeh. If you bring them together, you have Kor and the 15 Shamalos, and there are many other similar themes. I mean, there's a Chazal which refers to Yaakov Avinu, that he didn't sleep when he was at Lavan, he didn't sleep when he was in any Shiva Shem Va'eva, both before and after the Maaseh where he did sleep, right? Where he slept there, says the Pasuk, so he slept there, but not in other places. What was he doing? He was saying the Shir HaMalos. Again, he was, if you like, engaging in a Avoda which enabled him to perceive the divine in Olam Hazeh, to connect the two worlds. So, the celebration of Sukkot, the concretization of the Hisoros of the Yom Nirayim, links everything together. So this fits very well with the Pasuk Vayisoach Sameach. This is said in respect to Pasuk. So if you have a Samachta B'chagecho, and although we might sing them all together, actually there's a couple of lines in between. And then Vayisoach Sameach. So here's the obvious question, well, but once you're celebrating your festival, Vayisoach Sameach, what is the last phrase of what it's telling you? He says that first of all you're supposed to celebrate. You're supposed to take all the achievements we've done up to now and then celebrate. But the purpose is to remain in a constant state of simcha. Vayisoach Sameach, and you shall remain only in a state of simcha, ongoing. This fits very well with the whole hashkofa of the Yom Tov season, that Sukkot is Chag HaOsif. It's the wind-up process. It's the ingathering of all the physical and spiritual achievements of the year. It's not just the harvest, but it's also the spiritual achievements of the year. And the wine is supposed to be internalized in the process. And again, Rav Hirsch, on the phrase Bahasienu, the word Bahasienu means to load us up. Load us up with the brachas of Yom Tov, so that we can walk away into the year spiritually charged, and so on and so forth. Also worth in this regard, in the same theme, referring to the well-known Ramban in Parshas Toldos on the Be'eris, about the various Be'eris referring to the Beis HaMikdosh, that the two Be'eris which were filled in, the third Be'er which was never filled in, and so on, and how this refers to the Beis HaMikdosh, because the Beis HaMikdosh is intended to be a spiritual recharge. You go and draw from the well, and of course the well is not always open. You have to drink from the well when it is available on Yom Tov. Now, if we return to our original source, I think we've really tied most of the themes together. Why is it that we're so excited about mentioning in the Beis HaMikdosh that our ancestors used to point their backsides towards the Heichal? Just mention that we have come here, we have appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we lekar einenu. We think of and focus on Ka, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we understand why this name is used, because it connects this world to the next world, this kind of all-encompassing spirituality. So Rav Huttner, in his Maamar on Yom Kippur, I discovered it in his book on Yom Kippur, has an essay on this theme, and he quotes the Maharal, in which the Maharal explains that the process of shlichus of the Jewish people. The Pesach is the shlichus. If the appointment of the shliach, the shlichus. You're going to be my shliach to achieve certain goals in this world. That's the covenantal relationship between God and the Jewish people established at Pesach. You are my people. Then on Shavuot, as it were, we fulfill the covenant. There's a job to do, which is Matan Torah. He said Sukkot is reporting back that the job's been finished, the job's well done. It's reporting back that to the Mishaleach that the job's been done, that we have achieved our potential, we have done the job properly, and when we've done the job properly, it means we have brought HaKadosh Baruch Hu into Olam Hazeh. That's the job. That's the job that we were appointed to do at Pesach, which we've tried to fulfill, as it were, symbolically through Shavuos, and on Sukkot we can report back that we've completed our task properly. So, he says, this is why Sukkot represents the climax of history. There's a well-known Gemara in the Avodah Zarah which talks about the Goyim being given an opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkot and failing to do so, and so on, and what this means, what the nature of Sukkot means, the vanquishing of all other alien forces. Lots and lots of Kabbalistic literature about Oren Makif, about this surrounding light that encompasses the Jew, that the Sukkah represents this all-encompassing spiritual experience that you can step into, all kinds of things of this sort. But what it represents is that there is no shlita of the Kofas Chitzonis. There's no kind of external impact of spiritual negativity at all. That's, of course, as it were, the protection afforded by the Amanei Kovah that the Sukkah represents. Lots and lots of ideas. But ultimately it represents, says Rav Huttner, based on this Maharal, the complete vanquishing of Avodah Zarah. The purpose, as it were, of the Torah, to bring a Kodesh Baruch Hu into everything, into absolutely everything in existence. The feeling that spirituality and a Kodesh Baruch Hu permeate everything, that's Ka, that's what you have to achieve with the Sukkah. And when we can declare Ka, Hashem Hu Elokim, and the Ka, the Yud-Ke of Sukkot, then we have done the job properly. And so it's worth reminding ourselves at this point, when we stand there, as it were, in the Beis HaMikdash, having achieved the pinnacle of the spiritual year, the Sukkah representing, therefore, Sukkot, the climax of Jewish history, the goal of everything. That's why it's quite a strong messianic theme, because it represents just, not just in the life of the individual, but in the life of the klal, this kind of messianic experience. That's why we stand there and we say, they used to do Avodah Zarah, but we don't anymore, because we've gone through this process of history, and we are going through this personal revelation every year, this personal revolution every year. And so it takes us back to what Rav says, that the goal of Sukkot is to celebrate the achievement of the Yom Ha'Rayim, to go through a process where, through the Sukkah, and there isn't time to discuss exactly how the Sukkah fits into this, but there's definitely a sense that everything that one has achieved can be harnessed to spirituality. I've got 1 minute. I'd like to have 1 minute. Which is fast. Right. It's very clever to have the clocks all over the place. Because you have where the speaker looks, you can see the clock. Right? You know that the Gemara learns that you have to use solus go viekev to make your sukkah. Means that you have to cut, there are bits that have to be of the plant, that have to be cut off from the trees or plant, and anything which is connected you can't use, and anything which is in the Kabbalah Tumah you can't use, and so on. And that's the celebration. So the Sukkah, Chag HaSukkah says, Olachoshivation, Ba'osvachom, Yigonachom, Yigvecho. That's how, and the Gemara learns from this, the Dinim of Schach. So the sense is that the Mekubalim understand that you go through the process of Yom Ha'Rayim where you're effectively discarding stuff. It's a process of spiritual examination and throwing everything away. Lots of stuff gets chucked out, and we hope that you leave Yom Kippur with sort of, if you like, a pared down and superior personality of the way you began. But Hasidic thinkers are not very big on that, losing parts of oneself and kind of chucking everything away. Everything's got a purpose. And so he says the idea here is that once you come to Sukkot and you've gone through this Hashem Elokim, you realise that God's in everything, and I can bring it all back again, and all the offcuts and waste and stuff, I can symbolically, as it were, make my sukkah from all that, and so on, and so I can bring it all back in. And so Sukkot represents the climax of history, but also the holistic approach to who's making the notes? The holistic approach to personal development. And I want to just keep going on and on and on about how many are the minim. If you're interested in thinking about this theme further, you might like to consider how the meaning of the minim of the Arizal, to use your argument in the Sukkah, which has become quite popular, even though it's not necessarily the minim of Olam. Exactly what that means, about how that harnesses the inner life to the external life in this kind of grand spiritual climax post Yom Kippur. Have a great Yom Kippur.